You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Henat Baba. Next year will mark the 40th anniversary for jazz fusion band Hiroshima. The band started in the late 70s when leader Dan Kuramoto found music as a way to honor his Japanese-American heritage. Creating a signature sound that blended jazz and funk with traditional Japanese instruments, Hiroshima went from being a garage band to being one of the first Asian-American groups to get airplay on mainstream urban radio. For this edition of Bay Area Beats, Dan stopped by KELW to discuss four decades of Hiroshima.
My name is Dan Kuramoto. I'm born and raised in Los Angeles. I'm a third generation Japanese American. We are called Sansei, San meaning third. By title, I suppose, the lead of Hiroshima or Hiroshima, and we dream. I grew up in East LA, and I was lucky because we had a house. My grandparents didn't really speak any English, and they only listened to Japanese music. Just hearing the Japanese music all the time was intriguing to me and utterly foreign. But I did dig it. You know, I used to try to play it off like I wasn't relating to it. But I inherently knew that it had something to do with me in a very, very deep way that I would be obligated for myself to discover in the process of somehow growing up and becoming a man. The perception of who we were was so negative. The only thing I saw about my people growing up was either like you, some buck teeth, goofy guy, or somebody getting killed, you know, by a white man, you know. And I never saw anything about us that was cool, anything I could hang with. But as I was listening to music and coming up, there was a period there where all of a sudden these cats were doing things that I could relate to, and then I go, and it dawned on me that, you know, they could be proud of who they were. They were making statements, and in particular, out of the Bay Area was Carlos Santana. And to hear Santana come along and integrate, you know, Latin music, Mexican music, which is, there are different kind of elements, and then with jazz and with pop and soul, you know, he was creating a dialogue with young people that crossed racial lines, that brought culture in a shared fashion. And I thought, you know, if there's a chance for us to create an honest voice about American Japanese, maybe music is it. There was a community picnic, and I had this very strange art school band that played at like really bad Grateful Dead kinds of compositions. And at that picnic, this young girl, June Okita, she was playing a classical Japanese instrument called koto, K-O-T-O. And I don't know that I've ever noticed anyone ever play it live before. And I can only say that, you know, though I thought I couldn't relate to the music, I was tremendously moved. And a few weeks later, June got in contact with me, and our band was so eccentric that she thought that maybe we'd be willing to try and conduct an experiment to combine Japanese and Western music. She felt her only tie to her sense of Japan and all that she knew was through that instrument. So that became her life. And that spirit, that energy that she put into that became the energy that drove Hiroshima to become the band that it was, and for us to adapt, you know, so many different kinds of eclectic kinds of tools in music and try to express them in our own way. every record company said that, you know, you cannot sell records because Asian people, you know, they don't dance and they don't sing. You know, that was the racism that was pervasive in the music industry. I saw a memo at Arista Records. This is a joke. They said we wouldn't sell 25,000 units. In any case, in the first 3 months, we sold over 100,000 units. And nearly half of all the records we sold were in the Bay Area. We won it was almost embarrassing, but every Billboard Award, Breakout Artist of the Year, and all this other stuff. And we didn't know what to do with it. You know, all we knew is that we needed to continue to try to create a voice for who we were and who this country's ultimate music potential is. The palette is large, and the opportunities aren't, but the palette is there. The opportunity was, especially if you weren't playing straight up pop or rock, was black radio. And black radio embraced what they thought was good. Black radio never had a color line. They're very progressive and very hip. And that was a big break. It's that cultural embrace that black radio provided that I think lifted American music. We're all sharing this thing. I mean, and it's a beautiful aspect of music, that whole sense of shared community, that expansive culture kind of thing, you know, that even white people can be cool, you know, even Asians could possibly be cool, you know, that we all could be cool, you know, and that we all had so much to share. Because music was a place that you can go where you could become spiritually connected and you didn't have to explain away it to anybody but yourself. You could just dig what you dig and you were cool. For so many people, they find, especially the music June writes, so Healing Shrewd, she wrote a song called A Thousand Cranes. And in all honesty, we've received hundreds of letters saying, you know, this made our wedding. This also made me, you know, as I was going through chemotherapy, you know, that kind of thing. You know, songs like that, or there are other songs that we wrote about having pride and so forth. And we would get these letters with a photo. And, you know, I'm the only black Japanese guy in this town in Wichita, and I never had any identity at all. And when you made this record, you pretty much saved my life, because I carry it with me everywhere I go at school. And when you say, "What the heck are you?" he says, "I just hold up your album." You know, and those kinds of things, you know, they're beyond motivating, you know, and we're very anxious to see what we're going to do our 40th year.